plane. "I'll just go in and make sure there's nothing she might use to escape," Paul said. The walls in this place must be practically paper thin. His words came through quite clearly.
"Of course there isn't," the woman sounded indignant. "There's not so much as a stray matchstick. We made sure of that before we put her in there. And besides, the door's locked."
Paul laughed shortly.
"You don't know her. I've seen her disarm a man using nothing but a loaf of stale bread and pick a lock with a bent hairpin."
Evie supposed it was gratifying, if unfortunate, to hear that Paul wasn't likely to underestimate her abilities. But the next moment she heard a step in the passage outside of her door and the rattle of a key in the lock. She had barely a split second to drop back down on the mattress, close her eyes, and force her breathing into the deep, even rhythm of sleep. Then she heard the door swing open. Paul stood in the open doorway, looking at her for a long moment. Evie didn't dare risk opening her eyes by so much as a sliver, but she could feel the weight of his gaze. Then his voice said softly,
"Evie?"
Evie's mind spun, flipping through the possibilities. With anyone else, she might try feigning unconsciousness, but Paul knew her. They'd spent weeks sleeping side by side as they escaped German-occupied France, and then they'd been married, even if only for a short few months before word had reached her of Paul's death. There were a good many words she would have liked to use to describe Paul at this moment, but, also unfortunately for her, stupid would never be one of them. Evie didn't trust herself to put on an act good enough to fool Paul, so she let her head turn restlessly on the pillow and moaned faintly, as though she were just waking up.
"Evie?"
Paul took a few more steps into the room. Evie let her eyes flicker open. Paul was standing within arm's reach of the bed, alive. Chapter 1. Evie. Evie didn't even have to feign her gasp of shock. Until this moment, some deeply buried part of her must not have entirely believed that this wasn't some fantastical chloroform-induced dream. But it was truly Paul who stood before her now. He was as handsome as ever, his golden fair hair swept back from his forehead, his rugged, masculine face clean-shaven, and his blue eyes alert. Evie should have been angry, or terrified, or both. But as she stared at him, she heard herself suddenly laugh out loud. Paul frowned. He'd never liked being laughed at.
"What's funny?"
Evie had no doubt that he would like the honest answer. "You're alive and a traitorous, murdering German spy, which means that now I don't have to feel guilty about having fallen in love with another man," even less than he liked her laughter. So she quickly turned the laugh into a soft, wondering smile.
"Nothing. It's just... you're alive. It's like a miracle."
Paul's expression cleared.
"Nothing particularly miraculous. Just some careful staging on the part of the military higher-ups."
"Yes, of course."
Evie drew in her breath, trying to force herself to think clearly, past every last lingering shred of the drugged haze. Back during her days with the French Resistance, she'd enjoyed the missions that called for her to play a part. Whether her role was that of an elderly flower vendor who slipped hidden messages to allies into bouquets of flowers, or a young widow whose black cloak and veil concealed the guns she was smuggling past a German blockade. The edge of danger had sharpened all her senses and even made each new role more fun. This wouldn't be fun now, but it would probably be the most challenging bit of play acting she'd ever performed in her life.
"You're Siegfried, aren't you?" Evie said.
"I thought I'd recognized you on the beach last month, when you picked up the message at the dead drop."
That night, she had crouched on the white chalk cliffs above a Dover beach. She had watched a German agent row ashore from a U-boat out in the channel to collect what he'd thought was a message from a fellow German spy. At the time, Evie had tried to persuade herself that the figure couldn't possibly be Paul, despite the similarities in build and the characteristic way he'd moved. But maybe that was why the pieces had slid so quickly into place now.